This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
The Australian Bureau of Statistics will be giving all eligible Australians the opportunity to express their view on whether Australian marriage laws should be changed to allow same-sex couples to marry. Survey forms will be sent to all eligible Australians on the Commonwealth electoral roll. To participate, you must be enrolled. To enrol, check or update your details, visit the AEC website, search AEC or visit an AEC office. The roll closes Thursday, August 24. Authorised by the Australian Bureau of Statistics, Canberra. Spoken by Jake Downs.
Joy sponsor.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Good afternoon, Melbourne. It's the Escape Hour, your one, your only food and travel show. We are ready to go. My name is Russ Masterton, and in the building today with me, I have the fabulous Fiona Brooke.
Hello, Russ.
Hi, Gorge. What are you wearing?
It sort of looks a bit like a footy jumper, but it's not. It's a designer item, of course.
Of course it is. But you never play top price for anything, do you?
No, on sale, wholesale, or no sale.
I'm loving your work, loving your work.
Five-finger discount.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Oh, you're one of those.
Always a discount. Actually, I tell a lie. Sometimes I get lazy and I buy a papal price.
Okay, all right, all right. But you do look fabulous, which is one thing we can always say about you.
Thank you.
Now we go straight over to our muscle Mary, the gorgeous, the handsome, the gay, the gay Tad Lombardo. How are you, Tad?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well indeed. How's your week been?
It's been good. Really good.
Yes. Very good.
Very eventful, yeah.
All right, that's good. You've been posting some interesting things on Facebook, which I'll have to ask you about after the show.
Of course.
I have had a great week. We're really busy at work at the moment. Egypt's
that's
going
true.
Off, would you believe
it?
Really? Oh, we had 350 people booked this week for Egypt.
Wow. That's insane.
Yep, so
that's
the people are heading back to the Middle East. So it looks like the...
It's because of all our good work on this radio show.
Of course.
We've been talking up the Middle East quite a lot.
I think you're right.
That's good.
I've also had a week with my dog that's driven me insane.
I've seen that as well.
Oh, God, she's into rolling in poo at the moment. Right. So, and we don't have a bathtub for the dog, so the dog and I shower together, and it's been three times this week.
Really?
So.
That's
ooh. I know!
You're putting me off my lunch.
Is she young, your dog?
No, she's seven.
All right.
And she
loves the poo.
She's a poo roller, yeah. Mm. I don't know what that's all about, but I tell you what, I've had enough. I have spray. I just feel as though it's in my nostrils, so I'm glad I'm here at Joy 94.9 today. I need to step away from the dog.
That's all right.
Where are we going this week, guys?
We're going to Spain.
Oh, how exciting.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, you know, I'm talking about when people go to and from parts of the world, of course, we have to reflect on the awful incidences in Barcelona today, over the last couple of days, and you know how extremely horrible that would be for everyone concerned, especially some of the small boy that's missing.
Yes.
Russ, how does that affect, you know, do you have people ringing you up in a panic who've got tickets to Barcelona and Spain and like go madly trying to change their trip?
Look, it's a sad state of affair in the world now that people believe that that's just the way that our world is going to be from here on in. When these terrorist attacks started happening 3 or 4 years ago, we would get people ringing up saying, oh, look, I don't want to go change my ticket, blah, 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 blah. And these days it's rare for us to get a phone call. People just accept that, you know, that's the way it is. And my personal philosophy, and I'm sure Tad will agree with me, is that, you know, if you're unfortunate to be in the middle of a terrorist attack, well, your number's up and that's just the way it is.
But problem is it can happen anywhere.
Exactly right. Exactly. I mean, it could happen in Melbourne this weekend.
Exactly.
And so for me personally, it's get on with your life, enjoy and keep travelling. Mm. And that's what the travelling public is doing. So it's...
I think over time and you know, unfortunately, as these things happen more and more frequently, you get a bit desensitised to it.
Which we all are, I think. I mean, I'm very sad for the people that
absolutely.
Died. Yeah.
It's awful. But I think the shock of it, you know, it's almost as if, you know, you almost expect it to happen, unfortunately. You're just waiting for the next thing. And why that is, I don't know why. I don't know if it's the media hype around them or of these events as they happen. But I think it's just more and more, you just get desensitized, and it has a different effect on you.
Well, it's very sad in a way. I mean, look, really, Barcelona especially and Spain has seen a huge surge of tourists go there since the Arabian summer or the Arabian springtime, whatever you choose to call it. Yeah. And so with places like Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt being closed and Tunisia, they've all flocked to Barcelona and places along the Spanish coast.
Yeah.
And it just... And the same thing we saw in Nice last year. It just seems that their little cells are waiting for these opportunities. Mm. And I just hope that they find the little Australian boy that's missing at the moment. Mm. That's very sad. His mum's been found in hospital, but they don't know where the little boy is. So I hope they find him. But the message is clear. Just keep travelling. And, the authorities are really good with this stuff. They really are. The minute it happens, they let you know. And if you need to get out of there, you get out of there, which is what a good travel agent should do anyway. If you've hit a panic situation and you want out of a town, they can get you out very quickly.
Well, that's why it's also important to register your details with DFAT
before
you travel. And give them the itinerary, your contact details where you're staying, and that way they know where you are, which is important.
And it's a conundrum. I bet I'm sure the Spanish are very upset as well, but it's definitely a conundrum in Europe at the moment because... a lot of European cities are just saying that there are too many tourists going to their towns, and so the locals are all demonstrating, especially in places like Venice and Barcelona, that they just don't want all of the tourists there. So it's terrible that these terrorist attacks happening. And then on the other hand, the cruise ship industry has created this massive disaster for places like Venice and Barcelona because the tourists are all arriving. They've only come for a day. They're not spending any money there.
They're
just coming and having a little bit of a poke around and disrupting infrastructure and everything. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that industry as well. They want the cruise ships out of there, and they want to welcome people who are going to spend 3-4 days a week in these towns.
Makes perfect sense.
It does. Yeah. I've got quite a few friends in Barcelona, and one of their complaints is that Airbnb is drying up all the full-time rentals in the city as well, because everyone obviously wants to come and they'll pay a lot more than someone who's living and working in the city.
At this point, we introduced Jesse.
Oh, hello. Yeah. I just jumped in there, didn't I?
Our Spanish expert, and we're glad you came in then. We're talking about a place that you've been to many, many times, aren't we?
Yes. It's definitely one of the places I love to go. We try to get to Spain once a year and always land in Barcelona. We've got a really good friend of mine, a guy called Francesc Castro.
Great name.
Yeah. Strong Catalan name, sort of. He organises a lot of our food trips when we're over there. Mm. So helps us get into little farms and beautiful wineries and cheese-making places and actually find some really interesting stuff. I saw recently got another friend of ours into there's a black market cheese aging thing going on because it's turned into a bit of a cash economy in Spain. Right. And there's this these old mines that they've converted into these cheese aging sort of rooms, I suppose, and sell it for cash.
Now, Jesse, we've got to go to our first break, but I'm sitting on the edge of my chair getting ready for Spain, and Fiona is
as
well.
Absolutely.
So we'll be back in less than 2 minutes, and we're going to properly introduce you.
Yeah, sorry, I just jumped in there.
Anytime. We like an excited guest.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
This is the escape hour, and we're all here in sunny and somewhat not sunny Melbourne, where our wonderful special guest is Jesse Gerner. Jesse has a wide array of amazing venues that all specialise in Spanish food, Añada, Nomada, the new venue, and Bomba, as well as a bottle shop that sells all things, all fabulous imported Spanish wines, amongst other things. Jesse, welcome to our show.
Hi, Fiona. Thank you. It's sunny outside now. It's beautiful here. Stories up above the
at
sea.
The moment.
Just blink. Just blink. It's a total Melbourne day. We don't know what's going to happen next.
It must remind you of Spain.
Not at all. Polar opposite.
Yeah.
Jesse, I really would love to know, how did you find this obsession with Spanish food that has taken your career in this direction?
Yeah, it is an obsession, I think. I bought a couple of cookbooks. I had a cafe up in Newcastle about 15 years ago. I bought the first Morro book, and I just fell in love with that food. It's based on Andalusian food, so there's Moorish influence in Spanish food down south. Mm-hmm. And I loved it so much once we sold the cafe when I worked at Morro for a few years.
Which
and,
is in the UK?
It's in London.
In London.
And part of my job there was smuggling charcuterie out of Spain back into London. So it was a great experience. We'd sort of go over in about three chefs at a time and try and source some amazing Joselito jamon and some lomos and all types of meat treats we could stick in our bag and throw a t-shirt over the top and bring back through Ryanair and into London. But and from there I just met Cesc Castro for one, and a whole bunch of really interesting people who are into the food, and started doing trips, like looking for lomo and all types of cured meats, and then finding, you know, little fishermen with doing sardines, anchovies, like mahama, which is like a fish version of jamon, basically, like a air-cured tuna.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And I just love those little trips. So then once I finished up in London, we went to Spain and just immersed ourselves in eating and drinking for about 6 months, and came back and opened Añada. That's nearly 10 years ago now.
Añada is such a find.
Yeah. So, and we go back. Well, I try to get back there once a year. And just sort of journey and try and... It's just, for me, it's just such a way of reigniting, you know, your passion for the food, and also just seeing what's happening. Because over the last 15 years of going there, well, 14 years, you know, the food does change like any cities, you know. It's really interesting to see what's coming up and the styles as it changes, especially after the GFC and, you know, a lot of these young chefs coming in and opening these little beautiful bars, basically, serving, you know, a lot of them have worked in some really amazing gastronomic, you know, sort of places like El Bulli and El Sol de Can Roca, and just using some of that technique in really interesting little hole in the walls.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite food region? Or do you take bits from each different areas?
Well, I actually fell for down south. I really loved that that Moorish influence, and I love sherry and...
So it's like Catalan and Andalusia.
Andalusia. But I love all the regions. Yeah. Like the last couple of trips, I went to the Canary Islands as well, which is really interesting to see that South American sort of, you know, influence there. A lot of corn, corn flour. And then I love also the Basque country as well. Right. I've been lucky enough to sort of cook in a 150-year-old gastronomic society in Matriku, which is a little fishing village. Yep. And basically you just get together and cook till the wee hours of the morning and drink. And
even better.
Yeah, it's great in this amazing old sort of club that looks out over the ocean. So
they love their late hours,
absolutely,
don't they?
Yeah. And why do you think Australians sort of have embraced Spanish style food? You know, particularly tapas and.
Well, yeah. Look, it's a great question. I think in some ways culturally we're quite similar. Like we're enjoying to be quite social when we eat, and also the chance to sort of try a few different things, and, you know, sometimes, you know, walk around the city a bit and have a drink here and a snack there and sort of move on as well.
So but it's not as much as a commitment to a fine dining meal or something like that, as far as the time it takes. It's a bit more casual.
Maybe it's that. But, I mean, there's a lot of... I mean, Movida, there's a lot of great Spanish food in Melbourne. And I think... Well, I mean, there's also Johnson Street was the original Spanish
street.
But, you know, the envelope definitely got pushed when Movida started, 12 years ago or more?
Yeah.
And I think, the city's just embraced it. And, I mean, we're lucky. I've got Bomba and Añada and Nomada, and people understand it, I think.
Yeah.
and enjoy that. Yeah, enjoy the experience of trying some different things, or you know. And it's also it's a great way to eat too. With there's quite a few people now that have you know, allergies and all that sort of stuff. The tapas actually works quite well with that too, because a lot of the dishes are only two or three elements.
Yeah.
So you can pick and choose things that you that works for you.
Yeah. That's interesting. But,
I remember when I was in Barcelona and I was eating my favourite tapas bar. It was actually a Basque tapas bar.
Oh, right.
And they served the tapas different to all the other tapas bars. It was in the old neighbourhood, and the Basque tapas bar that was all actually on pieces of bread.
Yeah,
which was the little pinchos, which is different to how some of the other tapas places were doing it, as far as my limited knowledge of Spanish food at the time.
Yeah. Well, they're exciting, aren't they? You can just basically get a plate and start picking food up off the bar. And
then they count the toothpicks and charge you according to how many toothpicks you have on your plate.
Yeah, and I mean, there's lots of different cultures. Like, if you go down to Granada as well, there's, like, every time you buy a drink that you get a tapa.
Really?
So, yeah. So it's sort of a university city. But yeah, like they'll sort of keep an eye on what you've had too, so they'll change it as you're having a few wines or beers. And
is there a signature Spanish drink? I mean, obviously there's wines and beer, like you just mentioned. But
sangria is obviously people love that. But there's also, like, vermouth is huge. Like, if it's generally drunk between midday and 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Sort of really?
Like, as we would have a coffee over here, you'd be...
Have a vermouth.
Have a vermouth.
I think I need a vermouth this afternoon.
I'm going to have to implement that strategy.
You look Spanish.
I should have brought a bottle in.
I do, definitely look Spanish.
Yeah. Hola.
I think last time I was here, I brought a bottle in and Pete Dillon ran off with it.
Of course.
Pete. Jesse, you said during the break before we went to air today that one of the things that you love about Spain and its food is the grazing and the siestas and so you literally can they don't seem to have these big massive meals at any certain time of the day, that it's all about enjoying food and at various times of the day. And is that how you've found restaurants in Melbourne and Spain work? It's all about enjoying the experience and getting into it?
Well, I think, Melbourne, if you go to any of the busy cafes too, people are eating any time of the day, you know, breakfast, lunch and dinner style options. But look, in Spain, it's, I do love that. And I kind of, it promotes, people still get really boozed up in Spain and Barcelona, but it sort of promotes a different style of having a night out, where I think sometimes culturally in Australia you'll have a big meal and then go to a bar finish with a couple of cocktails or whatever, where this sort of is an ongoing food experience.
Right. It is. I mean, when I was last in Barcelona, the people we were staying with booked us table for dinner at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Or 10:30.
Well, a lot of places don't open till 9, 8:30, 9 o'clock.
I feel your pain. My partner's Argentinian.
Yeah.
And so we have dinner every night at 10 o'clock here in Australia. And of course, you know, me being in my 50s, this hasn't been good for the the middle section of my body.
Chef, I'm the same. You eat at midnight.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. You know, I'll often get home from work and say, look, you know, I'm hungry now. So how about we just get that, you know, that oven happening and have a nice early dinner tonight. And then there's a few choice Spanish swear words. And then, then all of a sudden meals produced at 10 o'clock and it's the way it is. So
there's some great wine coming out of Argentina at the moment.
So there is. Yeah. They're really enjoying that industry down there. So it's absolutely spectacular. But I love, I think the Spanish actually have it right. I mean, you know what it's like for all of us. You know, we've worked a massive week in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And we go out at 5 o'clock, have a couple of cocktails, have dinner and then have a couple more cocktails, and we've hit the wall by 9 p.m. And we have to go home. Whereas, you know, that siesta thing,
I'm all for it.
Yeah. Do you have one every day?
Well, I should, but I don't.
Okay. Do you, Jesse? You're in the business.
I'd like to. I've also got three little boys that I do have one now and then, but you end up with a 5-year-old jumping on your head or your belly or at some stage. But look, I think it's a great way of getting through the day. But things are changing too. Like, a lot of people, especially in the bigger cities, like in Barcelona, where are sort of changing their days a little bit because they, a lot of people don't live right in the city as they used to. There would be, you'd walk to work and walk home and have a siesta. So, I mean, things are kind of changing with the different styles of work that people are doing. And it's interesting.
But, how do you think tapas came about?
Well, there's a couple of stories. The one I like best is down south, that there was a, that the wives used to put a little lid on top of every drink that their husband would have so they didn't get too drunk, basically, or the, you know, it was sort of like a lid. But also, like, the guys around Jerez will say that it's a, yeah, it's a little cracker that protects your sherry. There's a few flies and, and you know, it's quite a dry sort of deserty kind of area. And, it became a lid for a drink. Right. Generally, sherry, I think.
That's fascinating.
So,
sounds wonderful, doesn't it?
It does. And then it just grew from there. And I mean, it's quite a thing all over the world, tapas these days.
It is. I just love the story when someone says, "Oh, we're having, we're making Chinese tapas in our restaurants.
Spring roll tapas.
We're having, you know, we're having Moroccan tapas, or we're having Indonesian tapas." And I'm like, I get what you mean, but no.
Now, you can just turn around and say, clearly you're not in the industry, right?
No, that's right.
You're not in the know.
Are you, ready for marriage equality? I know I am. Whether you need to enrol for the first time, update your postal address, or simply check your enrolment status, now is the time to do it. At Joy, we want you to stop what you're doing for 60 seconds and head to check out aec.gov.au to ensure that your details are correct. The best way to respond to the postal plebiscite is to vote yes.
Would you marry Fiona, Ted?
Why not?
Yeah, I would.
I could.
Oh, that's very sweet.
Well, we could. I mean, it's just at the moment.
I wonder if the three of us could get married.
Probably not.
I don't think that's going to pass right yet, but let me remind everyone. Check aec.gov.au now. We only have until 5 p.m. on August the 24th to get yes ready for marriage equality. A community message from Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
So we're going to have Adelante playing in the background, listeners, today while we go to some important messages from Mr. Lombardo. What's going on in radio world here, please?
Everything's going on. First, we want to obviously thank a few people that help us put the show out there. We'd like to thank Peter Tucknell, our podcast manager, who makes sure that the show is ready to go on Mondays for podcast. And if you're not aware, it is available for download on iTunes or at the joy.org.au website. I want to thank Adam for his lovely rendition of the news earlier at the top of the hour at 1 o'clock.
We love Adam.
Yeah. Alex, who's on the front desk. And, of course, we want to thank all our listeners without we would be nothing.
And new front desk person is Neil.
Oh, Neil's in the front desk. Sorry, Neil. I didn't see you.
Hi, Neil.
How are you? Thank you. Thanks for all the help. And, and if anybody wants to get in touch with us and ask our guest, Jesse Garner, any questions, you can SMS on 0427-JOY949. You can call on the phone, 1-300-JOY949, or email us on air at joy.org.au.
Fiona, you've been to Barcelona.
I have a number of times,
all right,
actually.
We want you to drill Jesse about your Barcelona and see if he's right for it.
Yeah, please.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, I think the thing is that with Barcelona, obviously, you know, we talked earlier about the level of tourists and La Rambla. When I was last there, a friend of mine got rolled.
Yeah,
actually.
It happens.
Rolled?
Yeah, that's what they call it. You get rolled. Basically, you get mugged.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And for some reason, I have no idea why, but for some reason, he had €900 in cash in his pocket.
Wow.
And he got rolled when he was coming to the apartment where myself and my friend were staying. It is I had my bag actually stolen, and I magically chased the guy down the street and got it back.
Good for you.
I sounded like this crazy old woman. I was like, "It's got my handbag," and I chased it. But you do, obviously.
Yeah, you see it definitely in Barcelona. I've had it happen to us a couple of times, actually. But, like, the last one was someone tried to dance with me, like a samba or something, like in the middle of the street. And you know what's happening. Like, you're sort of just like going, "Hey." You know, like, they're trying to sort of, like, just get you. You know, there's a few people standing around you, and but I ended up getting my wallet back, which was lucky.
Right.
But I had one experience where I was a bit silly. Like, I put my backpack on the back of a chair that had my passport.
Oh, very
and,
silly.
And everything in it, like wallet. And I was just doing my emails, and I turned around. There was this guy who was like, obviously, like in a prayer dress, like a big, like a Muslim man, and he was like sweating, and he was holding my bag, and I hadn't even noticed it, but like someone had grabbed my bag, ran out of the shop, he'd chased him in his full car, down the street, got my bag, and brought it all back, and I just without me even knowing what was going
on.
Yeah, it was great.
Good Samaritan point,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, it was. So, I mean, you do see it, like it's especially since the GFC, I suppose, like after 2008, like a lot of these guys that, you know, were working for cash and all that had dried up a bit. So there is a few more desperate people, I suppose.
Mm. But it's like anywhere
in the cities.
We have it here in Melbourne.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Just,
yeah.
Just be street smart. And,
but of course, beautiful thing about places like, I mean, the cities and Spain all over is that it's a warm and beautifully welcoming place.
It is. Yeah, it's absolutely. Culturally. And
yeah, it's one of the most, culturally liberal countries in the world. And for our community, the LGBTI community is one of the friendliest. This year, Madrid has been voted the friendliest LGBTI city in the world. And
that's fantastic.
Yeah, that was number one and top. The list of the top 10, Barcelona was number 8. And, so it's pretty
Madrid
amazing.
Madrid Pride.
Well, they had Madrid Pride and also World Pride this year, I think.
Okay, yeah. Well, they would have gone off. Yeah. I tell you what, the men at Madrid Pride, Ted.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going.
Okay, you're the travel agent.
I will crochet you a pair of shorts.
Please. And Why do we need shorts?
Well, I don't know. I just thought.
I think that
my mind has gone to another place. I thought we might need some dance shorts for dancing in the street.
Oh, okay, that's all right. Cool.
But Madrid's got an absolutely gorgeous set of botanical gardens and that glass house right in the middle of those
amazing.
Is that
botanical gardens.
Oh.
No. We're off Pride now. Okay. It does have the most spectacular botanical gardens I've ever seen, and this glass house right in the middle is stunning, absolutely stunning.
Well, one of my favourite parts of Madrid is the Prado. The art museum is
It's full on, isn't it?
Oh, like my goodness. I just love it.
It's great. When I go there, I've got to have an idea of what I want to see and sort of almost put like blinds.
Yeah.
Like just sort of just walk to an area and look at some art. Otherwise, I sort of get halfway in and kind of, you know, flapping my arms around and I can't, can't cope. You know, like it's like just amazing artwork, but it's just so much to take in.
I've got a question for you too. We've talked a lot about the savory food and the drinks and things like that, but I want to know about more of the Spanish desserts. You know, everyone kind of knows about churros and things like that.
Yeah.
Is there anything we're missing? Is there anything what we're missing when we speak about Spanish desserts? And, chocolate's a big part of it.
Massive.
Because, you know, Spain was the one who had chocolate first in the world and held on for about 500 years before sharing that with the rest of the world. So obviously that would have some sort of impact.
I mean, chocolates are amazing. Everything's quite global now. So you have these amazing pâtissiers, pastries. The chocolates, come in many different varieties and different styles. Like there's this one little bar. I think it was actually up in Barcelona that did what they just called a warm bake chocolate in a little cazuela, which is amazing. Like just real bitter chocolate with just a bit of ice cream on top.
Lava cake kind of.
So it's sort of like a self-sourcing pudding, basically.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like really beautiful desserts. There's I haven't seen it. I'm hoping to tee it up for next time. But some friends of ours, basically butcher a pig and do like a whole bunch of charcuterie with it. But all the fat goes off to these nuns that then go and make pastries out of it that they raise money for homeless people.
Right.
It's like a lot of lard sort of based pastries and
which would be nice and light and flaky and
note to vegetarians,
yes.
Be mindful when you're that your pastry is going to have lard in it and know that you don't have to do that every day.
No.
But if you want to avoid it, I mean, it is funny. I was in Madrid and everywhere there was the Museo de Pork, Museo de Jamón, and I was like, these people are crazy for their pork.
Yeah, they love it over there.
Did you feed?
No, I didn't have any.
Yep. Right. What about pastries though? That Jesse's talking about. Would you indulge in a
I think like a lot of people, I probably would have unwittingly not knowing that they had lard in it.
Yep.
So anyway, I do now.
Yeah.
It's like when you're traveling in Mexico and you're eating a lot of beans because you don't want to eat meat, but you know that there's lard in those beans and you kind of might just have to suck it up because there's nothing else to eat. That's Mexico. That's a different conversation. Yeah. Wherein
you digress.
Yeah, we do indeed. So what part of, do you find, obviously we know that there's all these incredible meat products which we've talked about.
Yeah.
But, I mean, maybe from a vegetable point of view, obviously they have a lot of fantastic fresh produce because Spain is huge and there's farms.
Yeah. And there's a lot of influence from many cultures in Spain. Like, I mean, a lot of the Jewish influence with the meatballs and those sort of braised meatballs. And I mean, I don't know how true this was, but I was chatting to a chap over there. He's got a restaurant called Angel in Barcelona, and he was saying that what he thought was that, you know how they age jamón, like Joselito, for 36 months?
Yeah.
This came about through the Spanish Inquisition when the Inquisitors were walking around. A lot of the Jewish families would hold jamón in their cellar and sort of pull it up and carve it up to sort of to survive the experience. But but yeah, like going on to vegetables, like there's obviously they have a huge love of amazing veggies. Like if you go up north of Barcelona and south actually, but there's this area around called Olot, which is a lot of the El Celedicam Rocker and a lot of these guys source from there. And it's these tiny little farms that almost were a bit cut off from Franco and all the craziness of the, you know, pre-70s, and they weren't using sort of petroleum-based sort of farming products, and they grow these, you know, beautiful caviar peas and, you know, like great little, like, mushrooms, obviously. Yeah. And then if you go down south, you had that influence from the Moors with the seven solids. You know how they just do, like, a beautiful orange salad with orange blossom and, like, fennel seed, maybe a bit of coriander, and, like, just sort of celebrate each vegetable and try and get the most out of it. But as you said, there is a lot of love for pork. And but, I mean, the classics too are sort of, you know, piquillo peppers. I mean, there's lots. There's lots of veggies.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution. Here's the solution. Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the Featured Providers section within the iTunes Store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts, any show, anytime, joy.org.au.
Welcome back to the Escape Hour. We've got Jesse Gerner in the studio with us today. My name is Ted, and we've got Russ and Fiona helping out as well. I want to know what makes a good paella. I've had numerous dishes, and some of them miss the mark.
Yeah.
Because it's not something, I mean, it seems like something very easy to do, but it's not.
Yeah, I think a good paella, like, it's almost what you don't do is as important as what you do with it.
Yeah.
But, the base for it, obviously, is your stock.
Yeah.
Like, if you're doing an arroz negro, like a black stock, traditionally that sort of it'd be a cuttlefish stock with the ink in it to sort of blacken it, to help blacken the rice, and then the sofrito is, you know, the base of the rice.
So what type of rice is it actually that's used? It's obviously a short grain.
Mid to short grain. And so I mean, we use bomba, which is I mean, it's a great rice for your arrozes and your payers. But what I always look at when I get a paella is the sakarat, the crust on the bottom.
Yeah, and that's what makes it. I mean, if you don't have that, you've just got a bad risotto, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And it needs to be sort of quite bitey, the rice. Like you roast the rice or you cook it off in the pan to sort of help it create its own little bitiness and don't overstock it, really.
It needs to dry out.
Yeah.
It's the flavour.
And
texture.
Yeah, and just simply done. Like, I mean, a lot of the payers are, you know, with snails in there, or rabbit. Yep. Some with just, you know, fish or Valencian. I mean, a lot of it all comes from around Valencia, right. Which is
that's
down
where it
south.
Originated. Yeah.
But there's a town, I can't remember the name of it, I think it's just north of Valencia, which is the truffle region, actually, like just up around there, that does a huge paella for the whole town kind of thing, that, you know, like a big...
A huge, yeah.
I think it's about 8-meter pan or something ridiculous. But yeah, look, yeah, cooking over fire or on a barbecue is actually a really nice way to cook, you know, and get a good pan... too, like Casa Iberica sells some pans, or most of the chef shops,
Chef Hats. Yeah, that's good. And it's paella, not paella.
So double.
Yeah, that's how we pronounce
double.
That.
Double L becomes a Y, basically. That's right, yeah. So, and everyone's quite like you don't really want to sort of mess with traditional payers too much, especially if you're back over there or like you know, or sort of advertising it all over the place, you can get cut down pretty quickly from the Spanish community. But it's a great way. It's also generally a lunchtime dish as well.
But is saffron used a fair bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Saffron, I mean Iranian saffron, Spanish saffron, for a classic Valencian one, we'll sort of cook down onions and garlic. Yep. And, like, you cook it all down to it sort of caramelizes and then add your peppers and you cook that down. It's a slow process in olive oil until the sugar sort of comes out. And then we'll sort of put some tomatoes through that. And then, put a scoop into your rice that you're cooking out with a pinch of saffron and then your stocks. You can have a bit of chicken, obviously, like a classic one would be chicken, some fish, and some mussels, maybe, or you know, if you've got some prawns or, you know, fish head.
Or flavour.
So, it's such a great way to eat. I actually cooked one last night I had my brother come down from Newcastle and family over, and it's a good way to cook for 10 people if you get a, you
communal
know...
eating.
If you get a big pan and make a salad and, it's delicious.
That's good.
I became a paella princess in Granada.
Really?
I did. So, well, basically, my partner ordered the paella and I thought, oh, God, I can't wait to eat this. And then I had a view of the kitchen.
Okay.
And our paella had been made and I could see our waiter tasting it.
Ooh.
And so I had a great big hissy fit and said I wasn't going to eat that because another person had eaten it. And, of course, the waiter had come out and explained to my partner in Spanish that he did try the paella to make sure, to him it looked a bit dry and it wasn't going to be very suitable, tasty, but he only put a clean spoon in there and tasted it. But you know, in my Australian head, I'd gone through the whole how dare you eat my meal and bring it to the
tantrum.
Table. You've probably spat in it as well. And so I missed out on that gorgeous paella because
Was that in Valencia?
Granada,
But
there are so many fabulous places to go to in Spain which blow my mind. I am a huge, huge fan of Spain. By the time you get to places like Seville and Cordoba and then into Granada and Segovia, Toledo and Madrid, you are just gobsmacked by what they've got in this country, and the history there is
absolutely
gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
Well, that's a good trip, actually, if you get into Sevilla, like into Seville, and then you can shoot down quickly down to Jerez quickly and look at some sherries and get across to Granada without too much hassle and around Malaga and then, you know, shoot up to Valencia. Because it is a big country
country.
You know, to try and... try and do it all in a week or two is near impossible.
I was amazed at how long the bus trip was from Granada up to Madrid. It was a long way.
6 hours?
Yeah, 6 hours on a bus. Yeah.
What did you think of the Alhambra? Oh,
it's amazing.
I loved it.
Blew my mind.
I felt like I had missed out slightly because they were doing night tours.
Right.
And for some silly reason I didn't do the night tour, but that would have been incredible.
Just those fine pillars, you know, huge arches.
It is mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's amazing. Stunning. And the tiles. Yeah. And
how would you describe the Alhambra to our listeners, V?
Well, it's an extraordinary Moorish palace of incredible decoration and design. Of course, the Moors being Arabs, of course, it's all abstracts and abstractions and geometric and graphic. It is extraordinary. It's a beautiful colour. It has incredible water ponds, and it's just completely magical. You just want all the other tourists to leave the room.
So and if you're going there, you've got to book tickets very early for that.
You do,
What's your favourite destination in Spain, Jesse, that you just blows your mind every time you go there?
Well, do you know what? I love the little towns and the Pyrenees. From one of the last trips that we went on, we drove from San Sebastian all the way up. It was about a 12 or more, 13-hour drive or something through the Pyrenees. But some of these little towns and places to eat and the markets, and we stayed at an old nunnery in Orlot, which was like 70 euros a night, but it was amazing sort of set up, this place. It had a huge fireplace and there was all the big pantry, and you could cook if you wanted to. They had their own veggie gardens, and it's quite sort of alternative sort of place, I suppose, for, you know, a little country town. And but like going to actually like look at architecture, I've got to say Barcelona, you know, it's just amazing. And I mean, all over, it all offers so much, you know. Down south, like Cordoba, you mentioned,
mosque there is incredible.
Yeah,
absolutely incredible.
And then, of course, you've got the very contemporary up in the Basque with the Bilbao, with the beautiful museum.
Yeah.
I haven't made it there yet.
Oh, it's amazing. Like, apart from Mona, I think it's one of my, you know, favourites, because you have this opportunity to go and view art. And I mentioned before that sometimes if I look at too much, I get a bit overwhelmed. But like, then there's this huge atrium in the center where you sort of go off and have a look at a little wing of some amazing art, and then you get out and you can have a coffee or a wine or something and sort of vermouth. But go back in. It's a beautiful place, and it sort of looks like a weird fish.
Like a giant sort of fish ship thing.
Floating on water.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Yeah, it's amazing.
What about you, Ted? What's your favourite part of Spain?
Well, I've never been there.
Haven't you?
Really? No. I've studied 8 years of Spanish, and I've never really had chance to use it other than once when I went to Puerto Rico. So I need to go.
Say something for us in Spanish. Say, yes, I'll marry you.
I couldn't say it now. No? I have to get immersed into it, and it'll all come back to me.
Okay, all right. Well, you'd be a good person to go to Spain with. You'd be able to get us through the hoops and the hollers. You're a good time boy. Okay, well, for a good time, phone 0413.
Here's my number. Call me.
So when's your next trip to Spain, Jesse?
Well, I was hoping I'm hoping for something around September, but it looks like we might have to push it out now. I'm building or refitting a restaurant, Green Park to Park Street at the moment. So I've got to put my head down for a little while, and then we'll look at the start of next year. But I kind of like to push it out to May if we can, just for the weather. It's sort of, you know, like you get that nice, beautiful, yeah, few beach days, you know. It's sort of, if you get in too close to July, August, it's like
too hot.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Yeah, it's like Seville almost closes down for some of those hot periods. Right. And so
it can get up to the 40s.
And it's just,
with the humidity.
You know, and those beautiful old towns, like in the center of town, where there's a lot of marble and stone, and you know, just sort of you feel it.
Yeah, that's where they're definitely still keeping the siestas going.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
you know what it's like when you're in a small Spanish town and all of a sudden there's nowhere to go for lunch.
Yeah,
everywhere is closed. And you're wandering around and you're like, I've got nothing to do for an hour. I'm thirsty.
Yeah.
There you go.
Absolutely.
That's time.
Yeah.
One of my favourite places. I mean, the top places for me are definitely Cordoba and Granada. I think amazing. Are wonderful. The other thing I love is Madrid, just simply because people it's so underestimated the day tours you can do from there. When you go to places like Segovia and Toledo, and you know you've got a massive Roman aqueduct there and these castles and everything, and you just sort of think, I can't believe this is like 2 hours from where I base myself, and it's such a great place.
A lot of good day trips.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Welcome back to the Escape Hour with Russ, Fiona, and I'm Tad. In this studio with us today is Jesse Gerner. We've got a phone call message in. I'll just read it briefly. It's from Peter. Peter called to ask if anyone could recommend traditional places to eat in Algiers or Oman. He'll be traveling there soon and was after recommendation from any of us or listeners. Peter, I can tell you we'll ask our people about it and we can get back to you later.
Our people will get back to you.
Yeah, our producer Fiona Brooks in charge of that, so we'll gladly let her come back to you next week.
I will certainly ask Pierre, who was on 2 weeks ago, because we talked all things Algiers, and actually Dr. Fiona Hill, who was on talking to us about Iran, she takes trips to Oman, so I will ask her.
Sounds good. Thank you for your message,
Peter. Now, we've got to wind up in a few minutes. We've got Word for Word straight on after us, which is very exciting, so we might go around the table and just ask everybody about their favourite part of Spain and or what they like to eat in Spain, and we'll go from there. So who wants to drumroll start?
Being that I haven't been there, but
well, you know a little bit about Spain.
I would love to you know check out Madrid, Barcelona, as much as I could. And
we're going to Pride, you and I.
Yeah, we are. Definitely. But just to absorb as much of it as I possibly could.
Yeah, you're a real foodie though, so you'd love the tapas and sangria and everything, wouldn't you? Yeah,
not much I wouldn't like.
All right, Fee, before we go to the expert, Jesse.
Well, it's so hard to say because there's so many beautiful places. I love Madrid. I have been to Barcelona many times and have some friends there, and they were fantastic at showing us around. But I would most likely want to go to San Sebastian and Bilbao, which I have not been to.
Very good.
Excellent. And Jesse, you have a minute to describe your favourite Madrid, your favourite Spain.
All right. Well, like food, this is going to be really hard, but I've got to say, I mean, obviously charcuterie that happens there. The red prawns. Have you guys tried the amazing red prawns from up north? No. They get up to about 140 euros a kilo or something ridiculous.
Wow.
They cook them on a La Plancha on salt, on rock salt, and it's delicious. Look, I think if you just try, and if you're getting into Spain, to try and give yourself enough time to you know get to some of the little villages as well, as the cities are amazing, but getting out of the cities, just meeting people, and some of the restaurants are amazing as well.
It's an amazing place, it really is. And the good news from a travel perspective, we're only two and a half weeks away from all of the early bird deals for 2018. Yep. So if you're going to Spain, you've got to just, you know, go and see your local travel agent and book an early bird airfare. Yep. 2018 is only just around the corner.
So it'll creep up quickly.
You've got 2 weeks to go and you can book that early bird airfare. What a show, you guys.
Yeah, fantastic.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Absolutely. I want to go to Nomada and have a Spanish breakfast right now.
Yeah, please.
Like for my third meal of the day already. Right.
Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah.
Exactly. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for having me.
Listening. And,
thanks for coming, Jesse.
Yeah, we look forward to next week. We were talking about Naples.
Yeah, next week, Naples.
I'm ready for Naples. So at that point, I think we say adios. Is that right?
Adios.
Amigos.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.